activity of the cell. Third would be actually related to the liquids in ionic state. That would be actually ionic conductance. So it's rather general paper, but it's interesting. So might look at it as well.
But don't forget, the question was very simple. Doesn't matter the conductivity of the water or the chemicals in the water. It was a discussion of the ratio of plate size to current variance. That was the discussion. It has nothing to do with any of the elements you're speaking about in this particular subject.
John, read the article. You don't have to even read it. You just look at the pictures. And then I would be glad to have a conversation with you. The plate size matters at Drexel.
Well, I know the plate size matter. Okay. I'll look at it, but I know it's not going to apply to what I'm speaking about or your interpretation, but okay.
Okay, guys, you continue.
KG2CB. KG2WGB.
I didn't hear the conversation that you guys are talking about. But based on what you just said to Wesley, it reminded me of what happened to me back in ninth grade biology class. We went out to the pond, took some pond water, pond scum, put it under a microscope, and then had to identify everything. And what happened was I totally focused on identifying everything I saw, classifying it, and so on. The protozoa was this, that. And then I went to the teacher and I said, look, I got everything classified except this. I can't figure out where this goes. Can't get it. He said, it's nothing. It's dirt. I said, yeah, but it's got to be classified. Sometimes you can get such a narrow focus on things that don't matter, you think should be accounted for, and it sounds like a similar scenario.
No, not at all. It was a very simple question by a youngster who was asking a question on a little tank of water he had. But it has nothing in relationship to what Wesley was speaking of or his email. It can't have anything to do with it because it has no part of that that it's being viewed. He was talking about impedance and stuff like that. And that's not applicable to this particular experiment.
Okay. Well, what happened to me was I realized, you have to classify every biological thing. The dirt had nothing to do with it because it's not biological. But to me, looking at something, anyway, I thought it was a similar type of way of thinking, but wrong again. I'm running a perfect score so far this year.
Oh, no, nobody's perfect. You can't be perfectly wrong or perfectly right. It's acceptable. Yeah, this was a very basic little experiment that I was running. And there was no complicating factors at all. So all of that, just doesn't apply in this case. If you want to extrapolate, but this is so simple, stupid, basic, you don't have to do that.
Katie, are you trying to tell me that I might have stood a chance at answering the question?
Well, it depends on what kind of experiments you've done in your life, but it wasn't hard to understand, and it wasn't hard to visualize. It was, pretty clear and pretty concise.
Okay. All right. And as far as nobody being perfect, I don't know if you've listened in on the dinosaur nut, but he always asks a trivia question. And he'll give you like four or five possible answers. And I always knock it down to, like, two possibilities. And I'm sorry, I have a little rule. When you ask a trivia question, I don't run to the computer and look it up. I take it as of this moment, entire year of 2014, I have an absolutely perfect score. One of those two answers that I choose is the correct answer, and I always pick the wrong one.
Well, let's see. You have two selections, and you get one choice. You pick it, and it's wrong. Well, I would just stop answering those questions. But trivia can be fun. It's a good thing to do.
Well, no, it's like four or five possibles, and I always knock it down to two possibles. And one of those two possibles is it. And I always choose the wrong one. So my score is perfect. But, it's just fun. I figure if I go look it up, that's no fun. What's the fun in answering something if you look it up all the time?
Well, all you had to do is watch Groucho Marx, and he would say, who's buried in Grantsville? Boy, that was a riot.
Arthur Marx? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you listen to him like on You Bet Your Life. It couldn't have been scripted, not all of it. And gosh dang it, did he come up with every possible answer.
Only a good comedian. But he was very sharp, which most comedians are. They have a tuned mind, which is usually in one specific venue, but they are very bright people. Just some of the great musicians also. But the comedians usually have a sad life, but very bright people.
Oh, gosh, you had to be. Look at the nature of the business. Stand-up comedians are, by nature, they have to be intelligent to come up with something. Okay, I'll give you that. And they have to have a little bit of smarts about them to deal with the crowd as they're learning their craft. But for the most part, it's the same routine that took them 3 months to work out and perfect, and that's what they're doing. Same routine. Orville, you didn't have that. You couldn't do the same thing for 3 months straight and hone it and get it right. You had to get it right almost on the spot. You had to make changes all the time. You look at Gracie Allen. You look at the Marx Brothers. I mean, you could just go on and on and on. You know this.
KC2WGB. Oh, yeah. And, you know, even contemporaries, you take a look at somebody like Johnny Carson. He was very bright, very quick, and he was so fast, it was unbelievable. And another guy is, trying to think of his name. He wrote for Johnny Carson. Dick Cavett. Wow. I think he was a Yale guy, but he was extremely fast and bright, too, just like Carson. There was quite a few of them.
Well, my parents actually saw Dick Cavett. They were out east on the island, and he came into the restaurant. He had to have the coat with the collar, the sunglasses. He didn't want to be bothered. That was Dick Cavett. But I don't think they spoke to him. But if you look at Carson, he took over from Jack Parr, by the way. Jack Parr was sharp as a tack as well. And I think it was him, and I'm not sure if it was Steve. Anyway, it was Parr who gave us the late night format. Although Parr sat on stools or bar chairs rather than behind the desk. But Carson had to be sharp. After all, his sidekick had a big red nose because he was drunk.
Well, don't forget, before that, you had, you know, the guys who started with Ernie Kovacs, Steve Allen, they were sharp, and they basically started the late night stuff. That was before Jack Parr.
Ernie Kovacs, oh my God. I mean, what do you want to say, genius status? I believe it.
Well, I don't know about genius, but very sharp, very quick also, and, there was quite a few of them, and some of them that came up, like you take the comedy guy, what's his name, Jack Benny. Well, I didn't old stuff. I like more like some of the zany guys were good. Jonathan Winters, he was out of his mind, that boy. So, but he was excellent.
I've seen some clips here and there now and again. Jack Benny. Now, his shows, the pace for me was a little bit slow, I guess. And yet you could see it coming, and you had to wait for the story to progress a little longer than it should have. And it was okay, but I wouldn't say it was, oh yeah, Jack Benny, no. But when you see the clips of him, not doing a script, oh man, he was definitely up there in the brains department.
KC2WGB. Well, yeah, any of those old timers that came from vaudeville, they had to be very quick because they didn't get a chance on stage to waste time. You know, they'd be pulled off stage immediately, so they had to be able to read an audience, know what the audience wanted, and that's some talent. And a lot of these new so-called comedians are either into the filthy spectrum, which is, you know, it's not for everybody. Some of them are funny. Some of the things they say are humorous. But the real genius of comedy is they set it up, think they're going this way, and then they turn around and go the other way. And, you know, that's the part of the surprise, and that's what's really good about some of these great humorists.
Affirmative. Milton Berle, that one. And who was the kid who grew up in Williams? Alan King. And the thing is, you know, they're in the middle of their routine act, whatever, and someone in the audience says something. I mean, they had to be sharp enough to incorporate it into their act and make it funny. And then, like you said, back in the vaudeville days, they did that.
Yes, a lot of times at vaudeville, the audience led the direction of how the comedy went, and they were sharp enough to read that. But you had so many different, you know, the guys who played the Italian Alps and the Jewish Alps and those, we had some great comics come out of those venues, but we don't have those situations anymore. So I don't know where they practice their occupation anymore. You know, I know you have like the comedy club and stuff like that, but they already have a little bit of polish when they're there. Some of the things you saw in the mountain retreats was pretty raw and not professional, but they were honing their skills. And then maybe, you know, 3 years later you'd see them on TV. Some of them were pretty good.
There used to be a barbecue pit or a pig pit. Man, go in for $15, you would get a rack of baby back ribs that was like, whoa. I think they closed up about 15, 20 years ago. It was on Staten Island, by the way. You walk off the ferry and you go up the hill, and just before it makes that left-hand turn from the ferry, continues up the hill, you know, Bell Boulevard, there was a place there. And that was the pig pit. And I would go there once on Thursday nights. They'd have what they call comedy night. And you would get local people doing a comedy shtick, a comedy routine. And it was raw and unpolished. And that's the type of venue where people used to work on their stuff before they could go to a comedy club.
I think the club you were talking about was called the Playpen. Yeah, and that wasn't on a boulevard. That was on Bay Street.
No, it wasn't really a club. I can't remember the name of it. What you just said, it tingles in my brain, but I don't think we're talking about the same place. If you go down Richmond Terrace and you head towards the ferry, and you pass the ferry terminal, make the right-hand turn, the road will turn to
to the right, you know this, and then just as it makes a left, the road bends to the left. It was like right across the street over there. And it was a restaurant. I know they had a piano in it. And, you know, of course, they served drinks, too. But I don't think it was a club. It was more like just a restaurant. They happened to have a comedy thing every Thursday night. But you may be right. It might have been that, the name of it. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. You may have your directions wrong. If you come out of the ferry on the ramp, that's where Richmond Terrace starts. You go to the right. That's Richmond Terrace. If you go to the left, that's Bay Street. And if you go to the left and then up the steep hill, you're going up into the St. George area of, like where the library is, and Hay Street or something like that. The only club I know of, there's some to the right, which would be on Richmond Terrace, and there's some to the left on Bay Street.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it was a restaurant. I don't think it was a club. But, yeah, all right, if you're driving, something I don't do from the ferry, and you come out of there, and Richmond Terrace goes to your right, you kind of head straight, and then the road bends to the left, which becomes Bay Street, Bay Boulevard, whatever. And it's right there near that bend in the road across the street. But they closed up years ago. I mean, the building may still be there. I have no idea, you know, what's there now.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you come up out of the ferry as a passenger and you get to that point, right where Richmond Terrace starts, if you look up, that's the Borough Hall building. It's huge. And you go to the left, you're going on Bay Street, and now you look on the left-hand side of that street, the first thing you're going to see is a huge post office and some commercial. There's never been a club there. So it had to be on the right-hand side of street, of Bay Street when you're going south.
Yeah, that's it. You go up, it makes the turn, and then on the, not the water side, but the Staten Island side, the south side of the street, right after that bend, that's where it was. I never knew there was a post office. I've walked past it so many times. Thanks for that tip, by the way.
Yeah, at the Coast Guard base was right there also, right along the back of the post office, and that was GPO at one time. It's no longer a GPO. I don't even know if it's still a post office. But yeah, there was two or three clubs on the right, excuse me, the right-hand side. But they've changed the name so many, I have no idea what the name was.
Yeah, yeah. Susie used to live in Stapleton on Van Duser. And when I, like, for example, if I had to go catch a plane in the morning, I go down to the district. But we had a lot of arguments over this. She wanted me to stay, and I said, I'm not going to stay, because if I stay, I got to leave at like 2 in the morning so I can, you know, get to the ferry, take the ferry, get home, pick up what I got to pick up, and then first get out to Kennedy. Come on. I'm going to go home at 10 o'clock. But on nights when I did stay late, because of the way the buses don't adhere to the schedule, I would just say bleep. I'd walk. Manley and I would walk all the way to the ferry. And sure enough, as soon as we got near the ferry, that's when the bus showed up.
Yeah, that sounds like Staten Island. And it's still the same way. Then when you walk down into the ferry, the ferry just left. And at that hour, there's only like one ferry every hour. It's crazy here.
Well, the ferry didn't always just leave. But, yeah, I know the feeling. I know the feel. I mean, it depends on what time we left. And there was one time, just totally bugged me out. It was raining. So we slogged through the rain. Just as we got to the ferry terminal, it stopped raining. Now that I can go inside, it stopped raining. Okay, wonderful. Then we get off the ferry, and Augusta, Manhattan, and it rained while I was waiting for the bus. And then when the bus showed up, it stopped raining. And then it was raining up until the point that I got off the bus and came home. A half a block, they turned on the rain again for me. I couldn't believe it.
KC2WGB. Oh, yeah, it sounds like a perfect trip to Staten Island. That's the way it goes. You know, one time when we had the ferries here, the New York ferry, Manhattan ferry, I should say, that was like a half-hour trip. Then when they got new boats, it went down to like 25 minutes, 20 minutes. Now with these new boats they have now, it's like a 15-minute trip. But it's all full of tourists. You don't know what the hell they're doing.
KD2CBB. John, you're going to hate me. I'm disabled. I don't even go to the upper level. I go down on the lower level. Fine. Nope, I don't want my dog to get trampled. Thank you. And I just use the lower level. I avoid the crowd, and it makes life so much easier.
Difficult to avoid people, at least on Staten Island Ferry, going to Manhattan. You know, during rush hour, when people are going to work, coming back from work, oh my God, you get trampled no matter what you do. That's not a good trip.
Lower level, where the bicycles are. Believe me, there's no one there. I've done it many times. The truth is, the poor dog gets stepped on, kicked, walked into anytime there's a crowd. And the two reasons, because when Hanley says, why are they doing it? I tell him, because, Hanley, they're more blind than I am, and or they're also more important than we are. So I don't know what else to tell them.
Well, the one time the lower level had automobiles and people, but we don't have automobiles anymore over there, so I didn't know they have bicycles downstairs. But usually rush hour, the upper level and lower level is packed like sardines. You just don't get a chance.
No, that's correct. I remember the cars. The funny thing about that, the Kennedy class could accept the cars. The Molinari, not the Molinari, was it the Molinari? No, the Barbary Ferry. I abhor that thing. It is black. I hate it. I cannot accept cars. It's the smallest of them. Now they have the newer Molinari class, which is like the Kennedy class, and it has the automobile deck.
I didn't think the Molinari carried automobiles either. None of them carry cars from what I know. Maybe they could, but I don't think they're allowed.
No. None of them accept vehicles. But the Molinari class has a car deck. In other words, on the lower level, there's a center cavity of the deck that the cars can pull onto if they were to let them. On either side of that are, you know, room for the passengers.
Okay, well, that's a recent ferry, I think, in the last 10 years. And, I don't understand why they built it to carry cars if it's not allowed. But maybe they built a few of them just in case there's some kind of an emergency, maybe where they want to. Like if the, imagine if the VZ bridge closed. Oh, my God, we'd be in trouble.
Well, I missed that name you just said, the new bridge ferry, you'd be in trouble. That's the one I missed. I guess they wanted the option, or if the mayor wanted to get to Staten Island, he could have his SUV caravan go there. I don't know why they did it either, but I prefer the Molinari class over that Barbary. Oh, I hate that thing. I hate that one. Give me like the Kennedy class. I love that. Wooden seats, comfort. I like that.
Well, it's a nice ride. It's really an interesting ride for the tourists. They all love it. I mean, you know, for that price, what could you get? But, all right, we'll see what happens when they put this new Ferris wheel they're talking about. I got a feeling that ferry would be packed with all the morons that want to try to ride it.
Did I miss what ferry, Katie?
What did you ask?
Said a new ferry? I didn't hear about this. What is this ferry you're referring to?
No, they've started construction on a new Ferris wheel, the ride for people to go up in circles, you know, a Ferris wheel. And I am assuming that the tourists are going to flock to this monster, and the ferry will be quite jammed.
Where is this new Ferris wheel? I didn't even hear about that.
Oh, yeah, well, the morons decided they're going to build a 600-foot Ferris wheel. 600 feet. I don't think that's going to do well in some of the storms we have, so that's what they plan to build right near the ferry, next to the ferry. And there are no provisions there for intelligent parking or access or anything else. But they're going to build it anyway. What a pack of morons.
At that the battery or in Richmond?
Oh, there's nothing they can build at the battery. No, this is going to be on Staten Island. We're going to be famous with the biggest Ferris wheel in the world. What a dumb mistake this is going to be.
Where is this supposed to go? The other end of the boardwalk where the memorial is?
Boardwalk doesn't come that far. It's going to be, from what I understand, if you are approaching the Staten Island Ferry slip, it's going to be to the right, the old CSX, the old B&O yard.
Wait a minute. No, the boardwalk terminates at the memorial, the 9/11 memorial. And you're saying it's going to be like in the vicinity of the ballpark on across the street or something?
Not across the street, on the water side of like Richmond Terrace. Yeah, right near the ball field, the thing they call Yankee Stadium, another stupid idea that they went ahead with and built. Just incredible stupidity over here. When they have the opportunity to do something right, they don't do it, and then when they do something, they screw it up. So, and the boardwalk, I don't know where this memorial you're talking about is, but the boardwalk runs through, Midland Beach, Woodland Beach, and South Beach. It doesn't go to the ferry.
No, wait. The little boardwalk I'm talking about is at the foot of the ballpark. It's just shy of the ferry terminal by about 20th of a mile, 40th of a mile. You know, it's where that so-called parking lot is. That's the only place where it isn't. And it runs over to where the memorial is, and that's it.
Well, first of all, that's not a boardwalk. That's a promenade. The boardwalk is made out of boards. That's not boards.
Oh, yes, it is. That part is. The actual boards runs from where I just told you. But what boardwalk are you talking about, then?
The only boardwalk on Staten Island. It runs from the town of Newdorp, near what used to be Miller Field, and it runs all the way to South Beach, the end of South Beach, where you get a nice view of the BC Bridge.
I'm not sure where that is. That's on the side, right?
Well, it runs parallel with the Narrows. I think it's called the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Boardwalk for some reason. I have no idea.
KD2CBB. Okay. And then that would be north of those two man-made islands, right?
Those islands aren't man-made. If you're talking about Hoffman and Swinburne?
Yeah, the ones that were originally the quarantine islands before they built the complex at Ellis Island.
No, I don't believe they were ever quarantine islands. I don't remember that. But at one time, there was a huge crematorium out there on Swinburne. Hoffman Island had some buildings on it, but I don't think those were for immigrants.
Yeah, in the 1800s they did. I
think they were kind of like man-made, you know, some ships wrecked out there, and then they added crap to it, built a couple of islands. But, yeah, they did use a couple of islands over there in the 1800s. That I know.
Well, it could be. I'm just not aware of it. But they're awful small. I don't know, you know, nothing the size of Ellis Island, that's for sure. They're not even the size of... I don't even think they're as big as Bedloe's Island.
Yeah, well, you know how I am with names, Michael. Can't remember anything. I'll have to look it up and get back to you on it with more details, but I know they were used in, before Ellis Island as a quarantine. And that may be Hoffman's sense, but, you know, but I know they had the where the crematorium is. Was you know, the problem with New York is there's 40 plus islands. It's hard to remember them all.
You don't have to. Most of them are a waste of time. Let's see. I'm trying to remember. Now, we had a thing called quarantine, which had nothing to do with the immigrants. Quarantine was in Gravesend Bay and the Narrows, and the ships that came in had to quarantine for 30 days to prevent, you know, exposure to any of the diseases they were carrying and things like that. That was here on Staten Island, and they closed that quite a few years ago. But that's the only other thing I know of. But the quarantine element and the station was on Staten Island in, I think it was...
Did that info in, like, my gosh, decades and decades. So maybe the processing was done on Staten Island, and the quarantine, if they thought somebody was sick, was on one of those little islands, you know, for 30 days or whatever. Maybe that's how it worked.
It could be. I was told that they were not allowed off of the ships. If they were sick, they stayed on the ship. If they needed help and they were serious, they would send the helicopter out and bring them to Marine Hospital, which was at one time for the Merchant Marines, which I know we still have them, but we don't have a Marine Hospital anymore.
Oh, okay. No, now you're talking about an entirely different time period. I'm talking about the 1800s. I'm talking, you know, 1850s, 60s, 70s, around that era. I mean, unless helicopters existed back then and I didn't know about them.
Oh, we didn't have them, but the aliens visited us. They had them. You could see them in the Egyptian tombs. Yeah, I don't know if we had quarantine at that time. Just right after the Civil War, I'm not sure of that. But I know, I thought it became an element when the flu epidemic of 1917, I thought it was in that time that they established the quarantine rules, something like that.
Yeah, that was after we had the, what is it, Board of Health or whatever it was called. And that came about because of Typhoid Mary. And, you know, it's funny because Susie read a book on Typhoid Mary and she started talking about it. And I said, yes, no, I know about it. What she's unaware of is the sign in every pub, like a restaurant, bathroom, whatever. All employees must wash their hands. That's because of the typhoid outbreak. And that's how you stop typhoid. And poor Mary was incarcerated on Little Brother and then Big Brother Island, you know, over at the conjunction of the Harlem and East Rivers. And, you know, but she was wrongly incarcerated. Yeah, I know. And I'm sure you know about that, but because of that, that's where the health department came into being.
I don't believe she was wrongly incarcerated. I believe that she was a carrier, but it didn't affect her, but she was able to spread it. And they were actually, I mean, you know, from the examination and the records, they proved step by step it followed her wherever she went. So I think they made a good decision there. I never heard anything different.
No, everybody who didn't wash their hands and wipe their nether region, it became a carrier because you carry it in your stool. And they found that out. And then after that point, they didn't have to keep her incarcerated, but they did. That's why I said wrongly incarcerated. At the initial time, based on what they knew, they were correct in incarcerating her. Once they found out how the disease spread and worked at that point, she no longer needed to be incarcerated.
Well, with the food processing that was at that time, it's amazing we survived it all. I mean, right now, we're worried about, you know, don't kill too many germs because you kill the good germs. And we've got to be careful about killing the bad germs. And, it's just, they've gone so far, and we still have trouble. Because all of the things we think we're killing, like tuberculosis, well, we did for a while, and it was reduced, but now it's coming back. And we're going to have the same problem again.
Yeah, well, that and bed bugs, too. I mean, that it's not just diseases, you know. When you go to Australia, when the plane lands, the first thing that happens is the custom agents come onto the plane, and they have two aerosol cans in each hand, and they spray. They walk up and down the aisles, and they spray the plane. Because they want to avoid getting some sort of fly or some flying insect into the country. And in essence, that's the right idea or the right way to do it, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah, put everybody in a flying gas chamber. That's it. You know, Bermuda was one that did that all of the time. When I used to fly to Bermuda on a regular thing, that they used to go up and down as they were going to land, and the stewardess would be spraying this aerosol. And, you know, you'd ask them, what the hell is that about? Oh, that's the law in Bermuda, you know, and some of the other islands, too. But I don't know if it worked, but it looked good.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is the reason bed bugs are on the rise is because somebody has it on their luggage, and don't ask, they survive the plane trip. And then you bring them here, and they go to a hotel or a friend's house, and before you know it, you have bed bugs. And, you know, it's pretty much the same thing with the TB because of all the travel and the shortness of the travel time. Things can survive that, whereas when you had a ship, it, you know, the things would die out before they got here.
Oh, sure. Yeah, some of the countries are really very, strict. If you want to bring, like, let's say you were going to take your dog into the British West Indies. No, your dog can't go there. That dog would have to be sent there, and I don't know, they put the dog in storage for, I don't know, 30 days or 90 days or something like that, because they have no rabies at all, and they don't want any start of it. So they're pretty strict on bringing an animal into those countries. Whether they're guide dogs or service dogs, they just won't allow them.
I'm not so sure that in the case of a service dog, that there isn't some sort of paperwork that you have to send ahead of time, and that you don't have to go through the quarantine period. Because I never bothered to look at the West Indies protocols for that. But they do make you very cognizant that each country you have to make sure you know the protocols and get all the proper paperwork done. You have to get paperwork taking your dog to Europe. I do know that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I found a little puppy when I was in Tortola in the British West Indies. And abandoned by the mother in the road. We found it in a little rut. My wife said, oh, you know, we're going to bring this dog. And we were there for like 6 or 8 weeks. So she was nursing this little puppy with a milk bottle from a doll that she bought in a store. And the dog was feeding and growing and, you know, became fine. Then she wanted to bring it home. Oh, my God, what a zoo. We had to get a livestock permit. And it was allowed in the country because that country has no rabies at all, so there was no problem with bringing the dog in, but I have a livestock permit, and I had to show that to the pilot of the plane, which was going to take us home, and he was just shaking his head. He thought that was the funniest thing.
KD2CPP with KC2WGB. Yeah, it is kind of weird, some of the forms and things, but the thing is, with the service dog, there are, shall we say, special protocols, because they're not considered livestock, per se, you know, and that's why the paperwork you have to get is a medical checkup from the dog's veterinarian, and that has to be signed off on, and, you know, things like that, so it's not like a livestock permit, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, that's because you're leaving from here, but the BVI, that's a livestock permit. But even if you have your dog, because I specifically asked the vet when I was down there, I said, what if somebody comes into this country with a CNI dog, a service dog of some type? It just doesn't matter. And, well, you know, he can check it out with the vet, and it doesn't matter, he says. They can check it out. We bring the dog here, and we'll do our own examination. So maybe they can do an examination and then release the dog, like, within a day or two. I don't know, but he says it was, I think it was 30-day mandatory confinement for the dog until they were happy. And that's the way they do it, and maybe they've changed now. I haven't been there for a while, but it was tough.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. The thing is, guide dogs have special permission, but they also have special protocols, too. I mean, when was the last time you took your dog to the eye doctor? I'm serious. Hanley has been to the eye doctor, he's been to the dentist. Oh, gosh, we have no idea.
KC2WGB. Well, my vet is a pretty well-talented guy. He does a lot of work on animals. And he's qualified for the full animal, not just the eyes or the ears or anything else. He's a qualified vet. There is absolutely no reason for a dog to go to a dentist or an eye doctor. That's what veterinarians do. So it may make you feel better, but it absolutely doesn't. It's not any better. There's no more specialty. I mean, you know, a vet is a very exacting science, more so than a doctor for humans, because the animals can't talk to them, so they got to be very good at what they do.
Yeah, I think in many ways they're probably better at what they do than the doctors who treat humans.
Well, you would expect it to be a little easier with humans because they can communicate in a much better way than a dog can. But if you can read dogs, you know, you can get some of that. But then again, you have the human who really doesn't know what he's talking about or lies to the doctor. So in that way, you know, it makes it rough on doctors, too.
No, I know this. Whenever I go to a new doctor, I tell them everything, and I tell them, look, I have no idea if this is pertinent or not, so I'm telling you about it. You know, example, if I have to tell them my appetite is off, I have to explain to them that I'm only eating like three, I'll order a pizza and I'll only eat three slices. My appetite is off. Because I can sit down and eat an entire pizza pie myself. And this is something they have to understand because, you know, I to them, two or three slices may be enough.
Yeah, that would be my sight because three would really be stopping myself. Two is usually what I eat. You know, that seems to be sufficient for me. But yeah, I've seen people, sure, eat a whole pie, absolutely. But I could never do it. Let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, but even pasta. You see people eat those huge bowls of pasta. I could just maybe manage a regular soup bowl full of pasta. But everybody eats differently.
Well, when I order a pizza pie, I try to leave two slices for, you know, whatever, as a snack. Susie says, you're not normal. And he goes, what are you talking about? I'm made for you. How many slices can you eat? I can eat two. I, if she's hungry. I mean, I have to be hungry to eat a whole pie, of course. And so I say, okay, see, I'm made for you. You eat two, I eat the rest. Peach is gone, no problem.
My dog loves when the pizza guy comes because she knows she's going to get her two slices. And so she has two and I have two. And if there's anybody else around, they can get enough. But the dog has to get her two slices. And she doesn't care if it has pepperoni or plain or sausage. Whatever it is, she wants two slices.
KD2CBV with KD2WGB. I think I sent you a picture of the white dog, Remington, and his partner in crime. Although he can hardly walk now. But anyway, what he used to do, his owner would tell me this. You'd be walking somewhere, and all of a sudden he would run into the bushes and come out with a slice of pizza.
Yeah, some of the dogs really go wild over that stuff. But, two slices is her. I mean, she could probably eat the whole pie, but I only give her two slices. But yeah, now my dog will sniff out food, but if she's away from the house, but she won't eat it. And it doesn't matter what it is, but she'll find it, but she won't eat it. I don't understand that, but I like it that way.
There's a guide dog list where people post things about, you know, their dogs or questions or problems, and then they get answers, and then, of course, they don't listen, and they do or don't do it anyway. But I remember one thing, one story was about their dog kept pawing at a cabinet or whining at a cabinet trying to get behind or into the cabinet. They couldn't figure out why. And then finally, when they did spring cleaning, they found out why. Some of the dog food fell behind the cabinet.
Yeah, my dog, they know, you know, when it's feeding time, which is 3 o'clock here, and 2:45, my dog wants to be in the house, and she goes over and stands in front of the cabinet where the dog food cans are. She knows where they're kept, and she waits patiently. She doesn't make any sound and waits for me to come in and open up the cans and feed her, or, you know, the maid, whoever has to do it. But she knows when she's supposed to be fed. And if it goes past 3 o'clock, that's when she starts to bark at the cabinet.
I was at Grand Central Station. I know the people there. That's 1, 2, 3 generations. I think they're 4 of watchmen. And Hanley knows them, and they adore Hanley, and so Hanley's hanging out. It's like in a hallway. I don't know if you know the place, but they do good work. And so Hanley's there, and somebody was talking to me, and I was talking to her, and then when our conversation finished, I turned around, and Larry, proprietor, although his son is taking over now, obviously. I hear him say to someone, oh, him? He's a watchdog.
A watchdog? You mean Hanley's a watchdog, he thinks?
Yeah, I didn't catch the whole thing. I was talking to someone else, and when my conversation ended, at that point, I heard Larry saying to someone about Hanley, who's sitting there, and he said, Hanley, you know, oh, he's a watchdog.
Okay, now you just have to figure out what is he watching.
No, these people are watchmen. They're like the third generation, fourth generation watchmen. Grand Central Watch Bandstand. And he repairs old watches, he buys and sells watches. That's what it is. That's what the store is.
Oh, okay. That's what I missed. All right. And that's in Grand Central, huh? I know that there were a lot of things in Grand Central that they cleaned out when they redid Grand Central. But I haven't been in probably in 15 years.
They've been there for like 40, 50 years already. They're in the hallway to the Roosevelt Hotel.
Okay, well, never noticed them. But there were a lot of places in there.
Yeah, well, I've known them since like 81, maybe? Something like that. I've known them for 35 years. And I met Larry's father a couple of times, and then Larry and his son, and his son had the kid, may have more than that by now, and the kid's got to be like 5 years old at this point. And I know Larry's wife, and on and on and on.
It's great when you can know somebody that's had a nice place and made a lot of money and still operating. Few and far between. But good stuff. Well, I gotta get up in the morning, so I gotta go to sleep. I guess Wesley must have went to bed. He didn't come back. So I will talk to you soon, sir. KC2WGB.
Okay, and two things. One, Hanley speeding time is either at 4 or 5 o'clock, depending on daylight or standard time. And sure enough, a half hour before that, he starts bugging me. So I go through that. The only mistake you made is, what do you mean you have to be up in the morning? John, it's already the morning. You're already up. That doesn't make any sense. But you have a 146 and enjoy the day. And I will see you down the line, which I still like better than down the road.
Down the road, I use down the log, just from habit. But you be well and enjoy, and look forward to a good year. We're going to have a better year than last year. And that's for everybody, I hope. Talk to you soon, Todd. KC2WGB.
KD2CBB is clear of the repeater.
Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. W2VL repeater system.
Yes. So has the princess gone back to school, or is she off for a good part of this month still?
She goes back on the 19th. She comes back from South Carolina on Wednesday.
Oh, I didn't know she had gone down south. All right. You and Wendy have a good New Year's Eve?
Yes. Yes, we did. Nice and quiet.
That sometime is the best way.
Yes. Sometimes it is the best way.
How's the elder offspring doing?
He's still on the mend. Back to work. You know, limping around a little bit, but he's doing fine. I don't know when we're going to get to see him, when he's going to travel east for a little bit of R&R. I'm sure maybe might have to wait till July 4th-ish, or who knows.
His healing did not get impaired by his lack of following the doctor's instructions?
Not, because when he proudly displayed his x-ray for all the world to see, he's got a lot of hardware in there, so I don't think he could have done much to upset the way that the hardware was inserted.
I know he did something, leg or foot, and he was in a cast, but I don't remember you telling me they inserted hardware.
Left foot arch reconstruction.
And they got hardware in there? Oh, he's gonna set off the metal detectors now.
At the very least, he should set off metal detectors.
He lose any flexibility of his foot?
I can tell you, because he's still casted up and he'll have to go through therapy and everything else. But I would assume he's got to lose something, you know? At least he's not have the same kind of pain that he had. And this all goes back to basic training. All of that hardware is U.S. Army, U.S. government issue.
Now that's one nice part about being in the military. You have a wonderful medical plan.
Yeah. My curiosity's run to whether or not there's going to be any degree of disability involved from this surgery and stuff like that.
Well, you'll find out. Hopefully he will not have any physical disability. I doubt that he will get any disability payments if he's not discharged.
And two, PPN Mobile, for those who could care less. Well, I guess only time will tell for that, however that works out. He sent me a text message late last night. Put some link to it. I didn't even bother looking at it. I'll wait till I get to work. I'm sure it's some silliness. Some other stuff. We'll just have to see. And probably be taking daughter back up to school on the MLK weekend.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. And hopefully you put your cold weather gear in the car because it's supposed to start dropping down tonight.
This is nothing compared to what it is up there by her school. I keep tabs on the temperatures up there, and the other day it was at -4.
And I'm sure they're scurrying between buildings in shorts and flip-flops.
No one there. The place is shut down.